Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest today is David Williams. David is a Seattle-based naturalist and author. I think of him a bit as sort of a Renaissance person. He describes himself as having a deep passion for all areas of natural history. A lot of his natural history writing focuses on geology and how that impacts our lives. And David will be giving the talk to the Quimper Geological Society this coming Saturday, March the 18th, and I'll give you more details about that later in the program. David has a relatively recent book out called Home Waters. It's a human and natural history of Puget Sound, and it's wonderful in that it weaves together stories of people and place across history, sort of maybe the 10,000 years of history that we can get a little understanding of in terms of human presence here in our wonderful natural world. And then today, my conversation with David on Nature Now is going to explore the concept of sense of place, or maybe home, in the natural world. What is that? Why is it important? And how do we cultivate such a sense of place? Welcome, David. I'm so glad you're joining us today.
Thank you, Nan. It is an honor and pleasure to be here and to be sharing stories and talking about something that I'm deeply passionate about and has really framed my writing career for the last 25 years of thinking about exactly what you say, this, how do we honor the place around us? How do we get to know? Mm-hmm. How do we connect with? How do we develop that relationship between us and the natural world and the cultural world? We can't separate them from each other.
Because we are in both. So before we go there, we need to listen to this week's mystery sound. So it is a mystery sound of our natural environment. You will rarely see just one of these little critters at a time. So we'll be back later in the program. We'll play that sound again and identify it. So back to the notion of a sense of place. I mean, I remember vividly when I first heard the phrase. I was in graduate school at the University of Washington, and I was taking an urban planning class. It was in the School of Architecture. I was not in that school. I was actually in Oceanography and Marine Affairs. But they were introducing the notion of a sense of place in this urban planning class, talking about the relationship between the built environment and the natural environment. And then now I realize it's oh so much more complex a concept than that. To me, the notion of a sense of place really characterizes the whole range of relationships between people and the spatial setting around them. So, David, I'm interested, as you think about a sense of place and talk or write about it, what do you mean by the phrase?
For me, the idea of a sense of place is an intimacy with landscape, about noticing what is around me and trying to at least incorporate it into my worldview, into my actions in life, and thinking about that I'm not separate from that natural mm-hmm. and cultural world that's around me. And we all find pleasure in many different ways and find connections. And for me, it's observing the natural world and having that somewhat inform my way of thinking. There's a Robin Wall Kimmerer gets quoted often. One of the points she makes, a term that I like, and thinking about sense of place and thinking about maybe what I'm trying to do as a writer, is she talks about this idea of being native and being naturalized. And I am not native to Seattle, and either from an Indigenous point of view or even having been born here. I got here when I was 5 years old. But over time, I like to think that I have become naturalized to place. I have adapted my lifestyle to fit into this area. I have tried to understand the connections between me and the landscape and think about, how do I feel differently in the different seasons? How do I observe and be aware of the seasons? For instance, the last few days I've been listening to the varied thrush in our yard, and that beautiful high-pitched tone that, as I call it, I'm thrilling to the trilling of the varied thrush. But that's, it all informs my view of connections. And that's really what sense of place is, this intimacy, these connections.
You speak of the word intimacy, and I really like that concept, because that evokes an attention, a intention, as well as attention.
Yes.
And that notion of being especially aware of one's environment, letting one's senses go out beyond perhaps the physical space or the room we're in or the car we're in. Let's talk a little bit more about how one taps into a sense of place, and what is it that creates that place? And is it unique to a place, or do all places have a sense of place? Can you have many senses of place?
Yes. I think if you have many senses of place, I was just back in Southern Utah for a week, where I lived for 9 years. And I think much of my understanding of thinking about the world, of being, even though my degree is in geology, and as we've said, I see the world through a geologic lens, I really think of myself as a naturalist. And that, again, gets back to what you said, Nan. It's about paying attention, and it's intentional in paying attention. I mean, I really focus. I try to look, I try to listen, I try to smell and learn about the place where I live. And so in terms of how to cultivate it, to me, there's really two ways but for me, my main ways are reading about a place, whether it is fiction or nonfiction or field guide or inspirational nature writing, and then just getting out in it and being aware. And when I'm out there, trying to be focused on where I am, not walking around with a cell phone attached to my ear, or I never wear earphones when I'm outside, when I'm running or biking or anything, because I want to be aware of what is around me beyond just the safety point of view, but to be able to hear those sounds. And recently, and this, I'm sure this has happened to you, you're walking along and you hear crows, and you look up and you see that crow making that big, those wonderful U swoops. And then you look a little bit more closely and you go, oh, there's a bald eagle. There's a red-tailed hawk. And it's that combination of, it's exactly what you said, it's using my senses. It's seeing, it's listening to the landscape and trying to be part of it. And that to me is very important too, to not try and come into a place and and force my change upon it. Certainly I changed the landscape of my house I live in, redid the yard and all that stuff. But I think it's trying to listen to that, the stories the landscape has to tell, and respecting those.
Yeah,
stories.
And I think your use of the word landscape is interesting, because I think it also encourages us to think and notice on a landscape scale, whether it's the particular ecology or geology or the habitats or the cultural history of the sort of larger space we're in. I sort of like your notion of combining reading and experience and thinking about the place we're in from a a historical perspective, a cultural perspective, habitat, ecosystems, and then how things have changed over time and how they are now and how they'll likely change in the future. Why is it important? Why is it important to cultivate this sense of place?
I think it gets back again to what I said, that we are part of this place. We cannot separate ourselves from this landscape. And the more we, I think, develop those connections, the more we're prepared for what goes on around us and hopefully can adapt and learn from the changes that have taken place, to look and see, okay, there used to be, you know, this unimaginable number of herring in Puget Sound. We don't have that anymore. So how do we get back to that? How do we be inspired by what used to be here? How do we work towards that, towards a future that takes into account that history of what we've had and the changes that we've inflicted upon the landscape? I don't think we can separate our actions from our knowledge. If we're not aware of the fact that, you know, where I live in Seattle, I'm just outside the biggest watershed in Seattle, Thornton Creek. And I know that there used to be salmon in the creek, and they do come up still partway. But to be aware of that and know that they were there, what do I do to maybe help ensure that they stay, that they're there for the future?
Yeah, and so I think to do that well requires a real basic sense of honesty. You know, honesty to observe, but certainly honesty to think about, you know, what the impacts have been over time. I mean, we as a human society tend to be a pretty greedy, extractive society. If we don't honestly recognize that, I'm not sure you can have a real sense of place.
Yeah, and also I would add to that humility.
Yes.
And I think we gain humility by looking at the land, of developing that sense of place and understanding the stories and looking at, we look at cultural stories and, you know, indigenous people who are still here and have been here for thousands of years and lived in a way that did not damage the landscape as we have done for the last 200 years of post-European settlement in the
Pacific Northwest. Yeah.
So I think it never hurts to be humbled by the natural world.
Mm-hmm. I am not indigenous either, and I certainly wasn't born or even raised here. I found this place because it spoke to me. I think there must be a huge amount to learn from indigenous cultures, and I think approaching that with humility is really important. I have only had a few insights into how some of our local tribal people view what humans have done and how even the language they use and we use, the same words have very, very different meanings. So I think that's another place for honesty and humbleness and attention and intention. Because I'm sure there is so much we can learn from these folks who've lived here for so long.
Yeah, to me, it's as a writer and reaching out to Native people to try and tell stories. I was just talking to someone about this today, and for me, it gets back to how can I be respectful of the stories and respectful of the people who shared those stories with me. I don't ever make a claim to be an expert or even really terribly knowledgeable. I just try to listen. And I think of Barry Lopez's writing, and as someone who was very much a listener and very much a person who did not go in with a preset ideas of who, what, where, when of Native people, of people who've lived in a landscape. But what can you gain by listening in a respectful manner?
This is Nan Evans, and I'm with KPTZ's Nature Now program, and I'm talking with David Williams about the importance of sense of place. I want to think now maybe specifically about Puget Sound and the Salish Sea. What do you think, as you have, you know, gathered stories, really defines our sense of place in this area?
I think part of it is that we have these multiple levels of landscape here, that we are not, that the sound is not just about the water and the sound is not just about the mountains, but they are it very strongly connected. And I think that's something that we who live here really benefit from. I think about the openness of the sound in terms of the physical space is very different than being in hiking in the forest. Makes us a special place. Mm-hmm. One of the many things, it's just that the ability to see the big landscape, the big openness of the landscape here. If you were going to ask me of a favorite place or a place that I would find as I think is one of the more magical aspects of the sound, that would be to be on the shore during the tide change.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I feel I tried to do in the book, and I did one day, was to sit and watch the tide change from one spot over about 8 hours, and to see the water come out, to be on shore, and then to breathe out and breathe in this idea of the landscape and the sound, this dynamic. It's a very living landscape, and to see these worlds revealed. I think we sometimes tend to forget that dynamic of the tide and how incredible mm-hmm. that is, that yeah, we can experience that.
Wonderfully powerful.
Then what we also miss, just not being able to see under the surface of this place. Mm-hmm. There's so much here.
You know, a couple of years ago, I met a young woman who had just moved to the Port Townsend area. And she asked me, what was it most important to understand about the area? And she was sort of talking about the natural history of the area, wanting to get grounded in her new home. What I thought about was the impact of the glaciers and how it sculpted much of the landscape. But then I went on to ask other friends of mine in other settings how they would have answered that question. Mm. And I got a marvelous variety of answers, from everything from the maritime climate to the trees and the densities of the forests. And I think all those bits come together, and maybe it's wanting to expand our receptors to get all those bits. As we talk about sense of place, and we talk about the honesty of looking at what I will say Western culture, since that's where we are, the changes that have happened as a result of our activities. And, you know, some people call that what we're entering the stage now is the Anthropocene or the sixth extinction. It seems to me, and I want to see what your thoughts are, is that having that sense of place, the understanding and the knowledge and the relationships, and you use the word the intimacy, so the intimacy of the relationships, both culturally and from a natural history perspective, first could help us see the natural world as something that wasn't designed for our use. You know, it's not to be extracted for our use. But it also seems to me that without having those real connections, it's hard to motivate folks to do anything. You know, there's that old classic adage, you know, if you don't want to protect a place or preserve it or conserve it unless you love it, and you won't love it unless you know it and understand mm-hmm. it. And I think that's an obvious truth. But as listeners are thinking about this, what would you suggest to folks to heighten their sense of place and then to take that next step to be more responsible for it?
I guess the first part of the question of what to do to heighten it is get outside.
Yeah, get outside.
And that to me is a central thing of getting out, exploring, getting to know places, going. I think this is not really answering your question, but I remember when I worked at a national park in southern Utah and people would come in to the park and say, oh, I'm looking for a place to go hiking. And I would say, oh, have you considered X? And they, oh, yeah, I've been there. Have you been there? Oh, I've been there. I want someplace new. And I think we tend to think that we all want something new. And yet when every place we hike, how much is gained by going back over the seasons? And I've really found that that's one thing about being, if you will, grounded in place, is to notice that January in my yard is very different from September mm-hmm. in my yard, which is very different from, you know, November in my yard. And the same thing when you're out hiking or out walking or exploring or getting to know your neighborhood however you define that. So it's getting outside, bringing the tools that you might, you know, if you have binoculars, that to me is a wonderful thing. Sketching and paying attention more through sketching or taking photographs and trying to see how you see the landscape. How do you frame mm-hmm. the landscape? I think that's the sort of first part in the terms of being more responsible. Again, that I'm not an activist. It's not my nature. My nature is to just try and be aware and share the stories of place. But I think getting out with groups, you know, one thing that's great about the Northwest is there are lots and lots of us who love this place, and those people who love this place are doing and a lot of amazing things. And we have lots of wonderful groups that one can get involved with and work that way. And we often are told that our actions don't mean anything, or relative to say, oh, okay, I recycled today, and that it, but me recycling is nothing compared with getting Climate Pledge Arena, having everybody recycle mm-hmm. there, you know, that corporate or government actions. But I also love this idea of flipping that around and saying that everything I do makes a difference. Mm-hmm. All of my actions are, if the more I think about what I do fits in with the big picture, no matter what it is, for positive and for negative, that I am part of that story. I am part of this place. And I think if you have, just like people are more likely to be kinder and gentler to their family, they're more likely to be kinder and gentler to their place if they think of it as a relationship.
Yeah, and I don't think one has to be an activist to do that. And I'm just realizing we have just chatted almost to the end of our time. I need to thank you, David, for this conversation to help us start being more sensitive to the world around us, the natural world and the cultural world. And I want to share with listeners that you can keep up with David Williams by checking out his website, geologywriter.com. And he also has a free weekly newsletter for miscellaneous odds and ends of things. And as I mentioned earlier, David is giving the Quimper Geological Society talk this coming Saturday, March 18th at 4 p.m. at the Port Townsend High School Auditorium. This is the first live Geological Society talk. It will also, of course, be broadcast via Zoom for those who find that to be more comfortable. Talk is open to all. And it's titled The Secrets of Seattle's Geology, Connections of the Human Story and the Geology Story. So I see that as like, that's a storyline, right? What we've been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I may, I mean, one of the things I think about is, and getting grounded, and excuse the pun, is that, you know, we live in such a geologic landscape mm-hmm. here, and that's both exciting. It gives us our beauty, but it also is terrifying because we know the potential. But it's understanding that, to me, is just so important mm-hmm. of fitting into place.
It's a good place. In our few remaining moments, we have to go back to that mystery sound. Well, those were the contact calls of bush tits. The little chirps are about all the songs they make. And if you've ever seen a bush tit, you know they definitely flock. They're little sort of almost furry gray-brown birds. They're cute as the dickens. And I want to quote a bit from the Cornell Ornithology website, all about birds, because it's a great description. Bush tits are sprightly, social songbirds that twitter as they fly weekly between shrubs and thickets in western North America. Almost always found in lively flocks, they move constantly, often hanging upside down to pick at insects or spiders on the undersides of the leaves. And I think that's a wonderful thing of intention, too. That's a niche that they found and they use. The flock of bush tits will arrive at a bush or a feeder in a flurry, and then they'll depart in a flurry. They're marvelous little birds. I do want to thank everyone for listening and thank David for your thoughts today. Podcasts are available on the KPTZ website. And our ending music for today, I had to do this, Homeward Bound by Simon and Garfunkel. It's on their Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme album, which many of us will remember from the late 1960s. It came out in 1966. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward Bound, I wish I was. Thoughts escaping home, where my music's playing home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories. And every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts are escaping home, where my music's playing home, where my love lies waiting silently for. Tonight I'll sing my songs again, I'll play the game and pretend. But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity.